Hello and welcome to Backmarker Podcast. This is episode number 92. My name is Brayden.
My name is Raj.
Raj, how are you doing?
I'm freaking doing amazingly. How are you doing?
I am pretty good. I am mostly recovered from my illness, and a good weekend of racing has definitely helped that.
Indeed.
Holy fuck. I don't even want to do all this bullshit we normally do. Let's just get straight into it.
Let's do it.
Alrighty, Raj. The German Grand Prix.
Yes.
I think might be my favorite race of all time. I know we're fresh off it, so maybe that's an over-exaggeration.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely fan-friggin-tastic.
It's definitely going down as one of the best.
Also, just in time for us to drop Hockenheim as a track on the calendar. Happy last race, Hockenheim, because it was a hell of a race to go out on.
It really was. Okay. I do think that is probably one of the most exciting races we've had the opportunity to talk about on the show.
Mm.
It's definitely up there with the best races I've ever seen. And it's certainly the best race I think I've ever seen live.
Wow.
I don't hesitate. In terms of just like... All right. And it's not just the fact that there was a lot of passing, a lot of crazy action and crazy results and all that stuff. But it was the way that the... And I was just saying this right before we started, that the way the race seemed to like... You know, parcel it out really nicely. Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, we've seen, you know, that, you know, the one of the craziest ones where, you know, half the track gets eliminated in the first lap and, you know, crazy wet weather races. Like, yeah, that's insane. But after that, you know, one or two laps of craziness, it sometimes fizzles out. This one was beginning to end, something seemed to happen so regularly and so consistently that you were constantly intrigued by shit, what's happening next? There was no lull at any point.
Yeah.
And of course, we can give a lot of credit to Rain.
Even. It didn't even lull after the race for a while, considering the news that came out after the race.
Yeah, like, we have penalties after the fact. I mean, there wasn't even that many finishes, so everyone got shuffled.
Yeah.
Every single team, to an extent, had been shuffled. Not everyone had a great result, but everyone got shuffled to an extreme.
Yeah.
And we will get into who benefited of that, who benefited and who didn't.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, credit goes to where it's due. The rain was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But not only was that, it's the way that the track responded to the rain. It had sections where it didn't matter how dry it was getting, you fucked up.
Yeah.
And that was consistent. The tire intrigue was interesting. At some point you had, I think for a very, very short period, maybe it was only half a lap, you had a couple of guys on slicks, a couple of guys on inters.
Yeah.
You had soft, you had mediums, then you had wets on. Like, it was just all over the
shop. That's the intrigue that not just a wet track gives you, but a drying track gives you.
And then a drying track that has another spurt of rain. Like,
exactly. A drying track that's, being re-wettened.
It was the perfect amount of weather. Like, not too much to the point that the racing became like dangerous in the point where safety cars lasted way too long and anything like that. Once the race started, none of those safety car periods felt artificially long for like, we really got to see if we can, you know, dry it out. It was a very flowing race.
Yeah.
Despite stoppages, which is a funny thing to say.
Yeah. Also, what do you think? Because this is a topic that will come up a lot in our conversation to come.
Mm.
But the runoff area on the outside of turn 14, I believe it was.
The drag racing area.
Yes, which is essentially the start of the Hockenheim drag strip, which has
an unbelievable
amount of grip when it's dry.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you got it wet, turned into what they were calling the ice rink.
Mm. It was black. It was slick. It looked like the bottom of a soft tire.
Yeah.
It was. And as soon as you hit it, there was a few guys that got away with getting on there and getting off it. Like, I notably Raikkonen had an amazing moment getting all the way out onto the gravel and saving it.
Yeah.
While others, such as Hülkenberg, didn't have quite as much luck. And
Raikkonen and Hamilton both made it to the gravel and made it out.
Exactly. So it was, I think that was the perfect level of like, you fuck this up, you have an opportunity to save it, but it's a very big ask.
Yeah.
And I think that was really good. I mean, yes, it didn't work out perfectly for some. For example, Hülkenberg went off, and the way, the timing and the force in which he hit his brakes. But Charles just flew off, though. That was a little different. Like, in terms of Hülkenberg didn't fly off the same way, he was going off, and the way and the force and the timing in which he hit his brakes made it worse. Like, there was no way for him to recover.
Oh, no, that's the thing. Like, his
because he wasn't pushing that hard to get there. He just ended up there.
His actions, the actions he was taking to stop that happening, as Martin Brundle said, made it worse.
Exactly.
Made it way worse. Because when you're skidding in a car, everyone knows hitting the brakes, you're just going to almost accelerate into the skid. You're going to end up flying off the road, and that's what Hülkenberg did.
Yeah. Well, look, we'll get into all of that. Do you want to go through drivers? I mean, first of all, the only thing I want to say about before the race was Ferrari had an awful qualifying session. It looked like it was lining up to be a pretty boring Mercedes 1-2. Yeah. It really didn't seem to be coming together that crazily.
Let's go through the top 10 after qualifying, okay. The top 10 on the grid.
So qualifying, notably, Vettel couldn't give it out there, and Leclerc ended up having to start in 10th because he couldn't get out in Q3.
Indeed, Ferrari had a horrible qualifying.
But in terms of the top three, it was Leclerc, Hülkenberg, Perez, Sainz, Grosjean, Raikkonen, Pierre Gasly, Bottas, Verstappen, and Lewis Hamilton. So, first of all, good job, Gasly, on a reasonable qualifying performance, starting on the second row.
Yes, he went backwards there, just in case anyone else was a little turned off. But anyway.
Oh, sorry, that was, 10 to first. Yeah, yes, of course, 10, sorry.
10th to first. Sorry, I was like, Leclerc got pot weight.
No. Hamilton got pole, of course, yes. And Verstappen splitting the two Mercedes. So, indeed. It looked like a pretty standard sort of start.
Yeah.
But then we get into the race result. First of all, our predictions are fucked. Like, we got nothing right. I don't think any. Oh, yeah. Where did I put Vettel? He might be the only one that I got like half a point on or something.
Maybe.
I'll pull that up now as we go through. Actually, you know what? We both picked him for third.
Oh, okay.
So we get some points there.
Right.
But otherwise, it's fucked. it's very fucked. What was my correct prediction was double Haas, wasn't it? Yeah, double Haas points.
Mm.
Yours was Renault above a Red Bull. no. So overall, not great. I think did I get it right with the? I think I was actually correct in mine technically. Yeah, I was. I got my crack prediction. Would you look at that? Basically, by finishing, I got that crack prediction.
Yeah, pretty much.
But anyway, let's go through the drivers. First of all, the DNFs, because you thought there would be two, and I thought there would be one.
Yeah,
there was six.
There was seven actually.
What do you mean seven?
Because Gasly, it was six before Gasly.
Oh, you're right. Yes. Sorry. Yes. It was six that didn't make it to the very end, and then Gasly for the very last second. Yeah. So seven. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. But technically, Gasly gets a position.
He technically finishes the race?
Yes. So in the qualifications, it's like those six get non-complete, and Gasly gets DNF 14th.
Right.
Which is
right.
So, I don't know why, because he completed a 75% or something. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, who knows.
Anyway, Sergio Perez was the first out on lap one. Really not much to say about his race performance because it didn't really kick off until then.
Yeah.
Whatever. Nothing to say about Sergio Perez. He was watching his teammate from the pit wall most of the race. Daniel Ricciardo was the next one at lap 13.
Mm.
Disappointing for him because, you know, it's just been so often that we've seen these problems from Daniel Ricciardo, and it was outside his control. This wasn't one of his incidents or anything
Big
like that.
Plume of smoke. I thought, okay, that's another Renault engine that's given up.
Apparently,
luckily,
he was on the first engine. Yeah, it was his older engine.
Yeah, but it wasn't an engine. It was the exhaust.
But they're not going to use that. Yeah, okay, so... Oh, really?
Yeah, it was nothing related to the actual engine, so the engine is fine.
So, well, they're not going to use it anyway. The reason they were using such an old engine was they were hoping to get a brand new one for Hungary.
Mm.
So the commentators immediately said, that thing's done way more miles than it was expected to do.
Yeah,
they were hoping to just get away with it. So I think, maybe Renault are kind of like, well, yes, it wasn't the engine, but we did take some risks there.
But it's a good thing to know that it wasn't the engine giving up. That it was,
and he'll have
engine,
a fresh setup completely next week anyway.
Yes, he will in Hungary, where I expect some teams to be right at the top, others to struggle.
Mm.
We'll get into that.
We will. Lando Norris in 25th. From memory, his was a mechanical issue as well, wasn't it? Well, no, he spun out.
Lando, I can't actually remember. I'm sorry.
From memory, his is actually an incident that, maybe he did just slide off.
I can't remember.
There was so much of it.
I'm sorry, there was so much happening.
That was lap 25, and then very shortly after at lap 27, we have Charles Leclerc, who definitely flew off.
Yeah.
A lot of damage from Charles Leclerc. His reaction was a whole lot of, fuck, no.
Yeah.
Understandable, because he was on for a decent race.
Yeah, he could have been on for a win.
Definitely. He was definitely in contention for a win. Guaranteed a podium, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Look, it was early enough in the race that I kind of, it's not as devastating as some of these other ones, put it that way.
Yeah.
Because of just the fact that it was lap 27. Some of these other guys, I feel a lot worse about.
That's true.
Including the next one, which was Nico Hülkenberg at lap 39. Now, look, he was definitely on for a good race. People are saying he's missed out on his best chance of a podium. I don't know. The way that Vettel was really gunning at the end, I think it would have been a pretty hard-pressed podium for Nico Hülkenberg. A lot still had to go his way later in the race.
Yeah.
He was in an awesome position at that point. Yes.
For a podium.
Yes, he was in a great position at that point, but whether or not Renault and Hülkenberg could have made, you know, made the most of the rest of that race and all the other changing elements, there's so many ifs and buts. I don't think it's fair to say he threw away the podium. We could say he threw away a very good chance at one, though.
Yeah, he definitely threw away his best chance at one. Weirdly enough, I remember watching the race and I was thinking, Hülkenberg's up for a podium.
It was the commentator's curse, man.
It switched right then to him going off. And I went from, ho, you fucking idiot. Like, it was
all the commentators were like, wait a minute, Hülkenberg's doing really well here. He's never got a podium. I think he'd be, it was the commentator's curse. If they didn't say anything, he might, it was voodoo in the air.
You believe in the commentator's curse,
especially when you watch footy or something, when, you know, the moment you go, man, he's having a crack, he's dropped the ball. It's like halfway through commenting on someone having a great game, they will drop the ball or they'll kick it out of the full. I think it happens in all sports. And it's not just the commentator. On the actual doing the call, you could say something at home, you will jinx them. It will happen.
He's having a cracker of a game. Yeah. What was that? His ankle?
Yeah,
oh, shit.
Exactly. You could really do it, and I think Hülkenberg may have suffered a bit of that. The pressure was palpable.
Mm.
And as we said, he maybe could have saved it because the way he went off was slow enough, and it would have been a rough one. He definitely would have lost time, probably lost positions, but he could have recovered it if it went exactly right.
If he had maybe the experience of a Lewis Hamilton. Or a Kimi Raikkonen,
yeah.
Maybe he could have made it up.
Or the natural like wet weather skill and recovery of a Verstappen. But clearly the way he went off, he panicked. He hit the brakes in a way that actually made the problem worse. And he just planed straight off.
All of them who ended up in that gravel pit made it worse when they were on the, as they called it, the ice rink.
Exactly. Leclerc was another great example of Leclerc, in a sense, I think, had even less of a chance to recover that. He went spinning pretty hard.
Yeah. But, again, for all of them, pretty much, the reactions they made were the right reactions for any other runoff area in the fucking world. It would have been fine. And yet, on this one...
That's why I love this so much, because it was that unpredictability that threw everything to the wind. Then we have, in terms of DNFs, Valtteri Bottas at lap 56. He was pushing hard at this point.
Mm.
He probably had the biggest contact with the wall of anyone, and the car definitely looked like that. I think this is a reason. This is one of the ones where I actually think, you know, that incident was maybe the most unavoidable because of the way he was pushing really hard on, I think at the time,
slicks.
Yeah, he was pushing on slicks, but he was pushing up to the back of Stroll, I think it was.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. So it was a move he definitely could have made if he'd, you know, kind of kept it going. But
in any case, I'm pretty sure it was mostly the slicks on a very greasy track that did it.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I just mean the speed in which he went off. There was no amount of braking or recovery. He was hitting that wall.
No, he was hitting the wall, yeah.
And then finally, DNFs, Pierre Gasly at lap 61. He was on for... he was struggling.
Yeah.
He was struggling. He was definitely struggling early in the wet. Like, just everything was going against him early. Mm. And it kind of looks like, you know, he's at least going to get some points here. He's making every little mistake he can, but he'll hold something together here. And I just think, really, Pierre Gasly was... The inexperience of someone like Gasly was showing, because he's never raced in this kind of conditions in F1.
The thing that took him out was... The definition of a racing incident to me.
Mm.
Because who was in front of him? I can't even remember.
At the time. It was a very busy pack. I think he was up around Albon at a certain point in the Haas guys.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. It was a very big section of the pack that was all backed up into each other.
In any case, he moved right just at the exact same time as the guy in front of him.
Mm. And
as a result...
It was a Toro Rosso. I think it was Albon.
Yeah, okay. It took out his front wing and he was out of the race. It was... You could not have predicted this. Mm. It was not his fault.
No, but there was a lot of mistakes leading up to it that were. So for him to be in the position he was, I think you can point to some inexperience from Gasly. And look, if you go down this list, Lando Norris, Charles Leclerc, Pierre Gasly, Antonio Giovinazzi had a pretty shocking race. Yes, he had some penalties as well.
Mm.
But, you know, the inexperience of some of these young guys, when you see someone like Kimi Raikkonen and Verstappen going out there and mastering the wet and recovering when they needed to and things like that, yes, Kimi Raikkonen got some penalties, so it was a bit in vain. But you saw some of that inexperience because these guys have not been out on a racetrack like this in their racing careers in F1.
So some
of that shone through.
We keep talking about Alfa Romeo, the penalties. So they got penalized.
Yeah, these are the next guys. So these are the guys that came 13th and 12th was their official finishing after the penalties. So now we're into the finishes.
Yeah.
Antonio, then Kimi. What happened to them?
Antonio and Kimi. So basically, their team was cheating or found to be cheating.
Mm.
Essentially, the clutch was not meeting the torque demand that the engine was doing. So it has to meet it within 70 milliseconds.
Okay.
According to the law. It took Kimi Raikkonen's car 200 milliseconds and Antonio Giovinazzi's 300 milliseconds.
So is this giving them an advantage by doing this?
Essentially, it was like a really crude form of traction control on the start.
Mm.
On the start only. When they release the clutch to get away, the engine and the clutch have to match each other, right? Within 70 milliseconds. Theirs took longer. In the wet, that's a massive advantage because...
And they did have decent starts.
Yes, they had excellent starts. The reason for that was the engine giving them traction control in quotations. It was a really, really odd thing. I don't think it was an intentional mistake. Like... Put it this way.
They probably
really...
put it in a mode that they thought would work well for the starts, not realizing that it had this unintended consequence that was cheating.
No, they said that their practice, they never practiced in the wet. Essentially, that was their reasoning.
But they put it in like the wet start mode.
Nothing like that. It's just that the simulations they'd done, their practice starts had been in a different condition, and it was like they'd fucked up because of that. They're going to appeal it. Whether or not that appeal does anything, we'll see.
Look, it seems like a pretty clear-cut ruling of, we're not saying you did it on purpose, but it definitely happened, and there's no way you can say it didn't happen. So
put it this way, if they did it on purpose, that's so fucking stupid. It's like something that's so easily detectable.
Mm.
It's like a 100-meter runner putting on jetpack shoes.
Like, you're like, hey, I think you got something. Yep, that's definitely jetpack shoes.
You seem to be cheating, Zenor.
So what that means is the very next guys, we have George Russell technically finishing 11th and Robert Kubica in 10th, picking up 1 point for Williams and meaning that Robert Kubica was the one who scored the Williams point this year. It might be the only one they score. So, fuck yeah. Like, awesome.
Yep.
Not expected at all.
Also, proving both of us wrong, I think we're like, all right, well, if anyone's getting the point, it's going to be Russell. Like,
yeah, I said
no
Williams
way.
Will never score a point unless there's a crazy race and maybe Russell picks up a miracle point. And in this case, it wasn't. They were not far off each other at all, though. So one more DNF from up at the top and you would have got a double Williams finish.
Oh, hell. George Russell's saying that it was some of Williams' strategic decisions that allowed him to drop down to that position. Otherwise, he would have been up in the third or fourth region at some point in the race.
Well, I was really hoping that Hamilton having such a shitty weekend meant that maybe the Williams would beat him anyway, but Hamilton just finished in front of them. He finishes ninth in the end. First of all, worst pit stop ever.
Mm.
But again, not completely Mercedes' fault. They didn't expect Lewis Hamilton to come in, but he spun out and then decided to go into the pits.
They were expecting, by the way, Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah.
They were expecting the other driver. Mm. And so when Hamilton just came in with half a front wing, they were like, what?
So they didn't know what tires to put on him. They couldn't lift the front jack because of the damage to the front wing.
Mm.
Beginning to end, it was an absolute shambles. There was a really good meme that said, because this was the 200th race for Mercedes and they were celebrating 50 years of racing, it was a big weekend for them, their home race, they'd all dressed up like, 1950s, hats and all that shit.
They had to do a 50-second pit stop.
Well, I saw it was like Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes deciding to celebrate 50 years of racing to show us how long a pit stop took in 1950. and this is the same time that we have another world record break pit stop from Verstappen. Red Bull broke their own record.
1.88 seconds, by the way. But I need to go back to Lewis Hamilton's pit stop. So he came in. He was the reason why he had the incident was that he was on slick tires. He didn't want to be on them. He came in, said, "Okay, inters, please." So they brought out. They'd already brought out slicks, so then they brought out what they thought were inters. They took off the blankets. They were slicks. So they had to go back into the garage, find the intermediates, come out with them, fit them to the car.
Yeah.
That's why it took someone so had actually applied a
slick as well. I think like the front left, they put the slick and they go, no, we're putting inters on. He's like, oh, fuck it. Took it off a second time.
Yeah.
Absolute mess.
Yeah.
But understandable for Mercedes to have had those problems considering they didn't expect him.
Mm.
So, disastrous. And it
shows that,
and you got a 5-second penalty for missing the bollard on the way in.
Yes. So, they're not invincible. Fuck. Damn it.
Who is good? And we've already spoken about Bottas, so not good for Mercedes. They only scored 2 points in their home race, so yeah. Here we go up to my crack prediction. We have Kevin Magnussen finishing just behind Romain Grosjean. A little bit of contact between the two of them at one point.
Yes.
A lot of tension in the Haas garage, I would assume, just after their double DNF.
I have a story about this, so don't you worry.
All right, we'll get into that. But I think overall, they'll be pretty happy. They picked up 10 points for the team.
Mm.
Defied most odds by actually getting a double points finish. And besides that little bit of tension between the two of them, I think mostly we could say they had a decent race.
Yes, their car's looking really good, isn't it? We'll get into that.
And they didn't have as many tyre problems because everyone had tyre problems. So in comparison, it was okay.
Yep, their car's looking like a piece of crap, by the way.
Well, 7th and 8th is not bad for a piece of crap.
It's not bad, but considering how many DNFs were there, 7? It's all you have to do is keep going.
Yeah, and they did.
Pretty much, and they did.
People, and speaking of keep going, we're going to keep going because then we have Alexander Albon in 6th. Good result for Scuderia Toro Rosso because we'll get into it a little before. Yeah, we'll keep going on that. Then we have Carlos Sainz in his McLaren in 5th. Awesome for McLaren. They pick up 10 points there. Lance Stroll almost getting a podium, but
amazing.
When Vettel was pushing that hard, it just seemed like, yeah, okay, well, good try, Stroll, but great position for him and
in
Force
weird
India.
Conditions, Stroll's like the king right now.
Oh, Stroll is the, like, if you ever get into a race day and it's like really threatening weather or the opening lap, 9 guys get taken out, you go, all right, Stroll will win. Put your money on it. Like, it'll happen.
Yeah.
Stroll has a mad ability to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and he's always on the right tire at the right time.
Exactly. There's
it's weird.
It's not like anyone ever notices, like, hey, Racing Point are doing something kind of gambly over there. It's just, it's not that, it's not ever like they're going to take a crazy gamble and it pays off. It's just, they just happen to make a random, pretty benign decision at just what happened to be the most unbelievably perfect time. It's really incredible how many times he's landed in that position. And
unless
this is
he's begging
one.
Daddy to control the weather.
Maybe sure at the back, they've got a big truck, like a Stroll Industries truck that's like shooting rain clouds into the air. Who knows? Then we get into the top 3, which is maybe my favorite podium of the year. Daniel Kvyat in 3rd, meaning
yes,
Toro Rosso is up there for a double Honda podium.
Yes, Torpedo. Congratulations, Torpedo.
Very well deserving.
Indeed.
And I think, every time I think Gasly's got something, you know, maybe he's a bit safe. Shit like this happens.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a crazy race, but still, he had to be there to do that. You know
what's absurd? There's Daniel Kvyat in 3rd, who drove a fantastic race. And then you have Alexander Albon in 6th, was it?
Yep.
I watched him pass Pierre Gasly on track during the race 3 times.
Yeah.
3 times. You're not keeping your seat, buddy.
Yeah, it's not looking good.
Don't know who's
taking
your seat.
And if we have more examples of like that, of this kind of thing on a normal day, like a normal dry race day, it's done. Anyway, moving on, Vettel first, he came 2nd, really pushing because he started way back in last. Vettel made some really good decisions with his team in terms of strategy, but towards the end, the way he was pushing, it was pretty good to see.
Yeah, it was. It was, and the fact that he made it to the end without making any mistakes.
Exactly. I was very worried watching him push through that he was going to get a little ahead of himself and run into the back of someone again or just be a little too optimistic, but he knew he wasn't going to get the win, but to get 2nd place was awesome for him.
Yeah, and he never saw red. You know, he just drove hard, he drove aggressively, and he drove within himself, and I like that.
Yeah, and then finally, Max Verstappen in 1st place. Pretty expected in these wet weather conditions. He also picked up fastest lap.
After
that spin and perfect recovery, I felt pretty confident in saying Max Verstappen was on the podium.
Yeah.
Towards the end of that race, I was like, yep, he's got it.
Yeah,
he just thrives in the wet.
In the wet, he is a phenom.
Yeah.
He is an absolute freak in the wet.
He is.
And Lewis Hamilton normally joins him there. But Mercedes were just having a horrible weekend.
It just never looked good for them. And I'm fine with that. You know, there's a part of me that says it would have been great to see Hamilton up there battling it with Verstappen. But at the same time, fuck, it was good to see him in the bottom of the pit, the pack. Like, that was nice to see. I feel bad for Bottas, but I'm also happy Mercedes don't get many points this weekend.
Yeah.
The only thing I will say is Bottas was going to get very close to Hamilton in points if he'd finished up on the podium.
Mm.
So that's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The championship is still Lewis Hamilton's.
Yeah, but it was within like a race win if it went this way. You know what I mean?
That being said, no, I'll get into this in a story. That's fine.
All right. Our predictions were you thought Bottas was going to win. I thought Hamilton was going to win. Oh, sorry. Other way around. But then the second place was just a reverse of the two. So we both had Mercedes 1-2s in different order. We were both very wrong. This is going to be very weird. My spreadsheet has never actually seen me type the words Kvyat into it. So it's unfamiliar with the term. Kvyat.
Highlights the cell red.
Yeah, well, what is this?
Incorrect.
You've only written like four names here all year, and now you're writing this Kvyat fella. pole position, you said Bottas, I said Hamilton, so I win on that one. And then fastest lap went to Verstappen. You said Bottas, I said Leclerc. We're both wrong. Number of DNFs, we were way off by a lot. And better or worse than last year, we both said yes, and by fucking God, it was.
Yeah.
That was probably better than almost any race before it.
The best race of this year.
Yep.
And I think, it's absurd. We need to say Formula One is dead.
Yeah, we need to complain that this is going to be a boring race, and then they will come together to have an amazing one.
Yeah.
We have Hungary this weekend, don't we?
Yep.
So, fuck, I'm... really don't expect it to be much.
It's going to be terrible.
We'll get into the race preview at the end of this episode. But first, we have a fair bit of news to do, and we've talked about this a lot. So, Raj, this is going to be a quick news week. We've got to do them snappy, all right?
All right.
I'll give you the first story.
All right. First story. Formula One is dead. It's dead. All right. Just so Backmarker has cursed Formula One again, I will continue. So the weight concerns that are driving kind of F1's refueling push, the current F1 cars are too heavy and too cumbersome. That's certainly the opinion of many insiders, including the drivers, as expressed via the Grand Prix Drivers Association. And it's weight rather than any great contribution to strategic variety or to the show that is the real motivating force behind the talk of a return to refueling. But while starting on a lower fuel would impact the maximum overall weight of the car and fuel package during a race compared with the current situation, it only touches on the fundamental problem of the weight of the hardware, which looks set to rise even further in 2021. F1 sporting boss Ross Brawn noted at Silverstone, "There are some things that we cannot turn the clock back on. We've got a very, very impressive engine, but it's pretty damn complicated and it's pretty heavy. But we have the car and a battery system and an ERS. Unless we abandon it completely, we're never going to get the cars in a different weight regime." Also, safety has gone up substantially, obviously in reference to the halo and all of the added weight that comes with it. It's a challenge that Lewis Hamilton came to appreciate when he attended last month's 2021 rules meeting in Paris on behalf of the GPDA. When the conversation turned to adding even more weight for the new era of cars, his jaw dropped. He said, "You sit there and they're talking about making the car heavier and it baffles me," the world champion explained. Renault F1 team boss Cyril Abitbol agrees that there has to be a keen focus on weight as the 2021 rules are honed. "I think it's important that we contain weight with safety, with electrification. With the complexity of the aerodynamic regulations, weight keeps on rising and there's going to be more of that with the big wheels and standardized parts. Consider that under the final season of the V8 regulations, the limit was 642 kilograms. That rose to 691 for the first year of the new rules, and we are up to 743 now for 2019. So we've gone up from, that absurd, 642... now to 743. That is an absurd rise in weight. Heading towards 2021, there's likely to be another weight increase, triggered in part by the move to 18-inch rims with new tyres. They'll be bigger and heavier than what we now have. Other elements of the car now have gone up to tender to standardise them, so they're going to be heavier as well. So the 2021 rules, even though a lot of them excite us substantially, are only adding weight to the damn car. And eventually you're going to end up with a F1 car that weighs a saloon car. You know, it's not going to be... It's not going to be good, which is why I agree with refueling. And I think it might actually come into play because the cars are getting stupid heavy and the drivers are getting a stupid angry. And I think that might it might come to pass.
Maybe. That's the first time I'm being slightly convinced of its likelihood, but I'm still not quite there.
All right.
The Renault team truck was involved in an accident on the way to the Hungaro Ring.
I saw that.
Renault can't get anything right.
Oh, boy.
The team truck, the driver was hospitalized after the motorway incident while traveling to the Hungarian Grand Prix. He is okay and expected to make a recovery, apparently, but, you know, it looks like a pretty serious accident, basically flying off the motorway. Back-to-back races can be very tough. And when you have to travel near 1,000 kilometers from Hockenheim to the Hungaro Ring, this Renault F1 team driver, well, tried to take a shortcut that didn't work too well. I know we joke, this is a serious problem.
Yes.
But it is kind of, it's a funny image.
Trying out some driving techniques to pass on to
I don't believe any of the vehicles were in the actual car. It was more like pit wall setups and things like that. They say it shouldn't affect any of their setup for the weekend, but it is a distraction.
Yeah.
And it's a funny picture. After the weekend they had, they're just like, fuck, let's just get on the road, move on. We don't want any of this stuff. We're sick of it. Let's go to the Hungaro Ring. It'll be much better there. And bloop.
You're stuck in a ditch.
Yeah. I'm surprised this doesn't happen maybe more often, but I don't know.
Awful.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. All right. So, speaking of Renault, Alain Prost is becoming the director of Renault's F1 team's parent company.
Cool.
So
RS Sport or whatever the...
I don't even know what it's called. The Renault Formula One operation is taking on a non-executive director role within the UK race team.
Good.
It's funny because it's kind of the exact same role Niki Lauda had at Mercedes.
I was just going to say.
He made a huge impact
into Mercedes' success.
A huge impact, yes. Mind you, Prost is already involved with Renault, so... What changes are going to... It is unclear whether his new role will basically bring on any changes to what he's doing right now or whether it's just going to continue
I think what we see, it'll be looking the same, but maybe in the background he's got some shit going on.
Maybe.
We'll see about that. Moving on. Did you see Honda's victory tweet?
No.
It's amazing. It says, he's done it again. That's GP2 victories for 2019. And they followed it up with a quick one. Sorry, typo. 2 GP victories.
Yeah.
Who do you reckon that's directed at? You reckon that was subtle? GP2 victories?
What do you mean?
GP2 engine. Now they get two wins and they say GP2 victories. And then 2 minutes later saying... 2GP. Oops, sorry, autocorrect. It's definitely directed.
They're just, yeah, all right. Wow, no one can give Alonso a break even when he's gone.
I love it. I fucking love it. That is Honda just, you know, because, mate, years, they just sucked it up. They just said, yep, Alonso punches in the face. That's fine. We don't mind. You know, that's fine. We're endeavoring to create the perfect synergy between Honda and McLaren for racing performance. Fuck you, Honda, you slow pieces of shit GP2 engines. And then they get to do this.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome. Love it. Love it so much. I love Alonso, but at the same time, it's, you know, he was pretty harsh. He's got to be able to take it as good as he gave it. So I love it.
I don't know if he's ever going to return to F1. Like,
no, I don't think so.
No.
I don't see where he fits in anymore.
Mm.
Which is, it is what it is, but yeah. I don't see it.
Yeah, fair
enough. 2021 have some craziness go on, and maybe, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. Alrighty, so Ross Brawn's also come out and said the recent F1 thrillers are the best response, quote, to vitriolic criticism. So Brawn says that the exciting run of races in Austria, Britain and Germany provided a reminder that F1 is still the greatest motorsport series in the world after the lack of action at Paul Ricard led to widespread negative comments about the state of the championship from
It wasn't just Paul Ricard. That was like just the fifth in a row kind of thing. That was the problem. It wasn't like all of a sudden we're like, this fucking weekend sucks. Screw Formula One. It was like, all right, this is now the point of no return. Agreed. It's getting bad.
Agreed. And yeah, he goes on to say, it has to be said that intermittent rain really made the spectacle, but it can't be denied that for different reasons, all three recent races have been hugely entertaining.
Mm.
And I agree to an extent. But it's the best possible response to the unfortunate criticism the sport received after the French Grand Prix, some of it surprisingly vitriolic. Braun also praised Max Verstappen for his second win in three races for Red Bull and suggested that the Dutchman could ultimately split the Mercedes drivers in the 2019 World Championship battle.
Maybe?
He didn't realize what he just said there. He could go on to split the drivers. In other words, Lewis Hamilton is the 2019 World Drivers' Champion.
He's admitted to it.
100%, and he's admitted to that publicly.
He's like, no, what are you talking about? It's very close. We already know that Max Verstappen could definitely come second. Oh, okay, thanks for assuring us it's close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I don't think it's a slip of the tongue. I think he knows. Everyone knows. It's fine.
Yeah.
It sucks, but that's the reality we live in.
Yeah.
And if he does it, then I think unofficially he is the champion.
Mm.
Anyway, I hope that's the case, but unfortunately Gasly's performance means it won't even be a constructors battle, really. Mm. But we live to race another day. It was poetic, wasn't it? As I mentioned earlier, Red Bull officially broke the world record that they had set only one race previous.
Indeed.
Previously, Red Bull managed to service Pierre Gasly in 1.91 seconds, breaking the previous of 1.92, and now Red Bull itself has broken that record again by a massive 0.03 seconds with a 1.88 in the German Grand Prix, which is even more incredible considering the chaos that was this Grand Prix that they managed to get it done in this particular race.
Yeah.
If this was... Maybe there's something to be said about having to do so many more pit stops that they're more on their game and they're kind of raring to go.
Mm.
But I think it is actually a testament to that team that they've really got their pit stops in order on both sides of the garage.
And Red Bull's always been...
Yeah, they've always been good. In pit lane. Yeah.
But Williams, who started the year with... undoubtedly the slowest pit stops out of anyone on pit lane, has moved to pretty much the quickest along with Red Bull.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable improvement from them. So
to give you some comparison, this particular pit stop was 48 seconds faster than Lewis, or if you prefer, 25 times faster than the Lewis Hamilton pit stop. Quite a difference.
Yes,
and the nearest one to this was a 1.99 for Robert Kubica at Williams. As we all know, Williams are kind of the pinnacle of day-to-day pit stops, generally speaking. Mm. So pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. All right, back to something we were talking about before. Haas could impose team orders on Grosjean and Magnussen amid all of their...
fighting.
Bumping and grinding. But the pair once again banged wheels in the German Grand Prix.
Whose fault do you think that was in that particular incident?
I only saw it once in passing during the race, so I'd have to go back.
Yeah, I couldn't really make a call as to whose fault it was. They both thought the other one was an idiot.
Right.
I don't think it was one of those ones where it's like, clearly Grosjean's at fault here or clearly Magnussen's at fault. I think they're just not giving each other enough space for teammates.
Yeah, no, they're not, and they're clearly not. And Gunther Steiner, the head of Haas F1, has pretty much had enough now. Asked by Autosport if stopping his drivers racing each other is now the only option, as did Force India with Perez and Ocon back in their 2018 bumping and grinding days, Steiner replied, "I need to think about it, but there are not many options."
I think they were at wit's end last week. This is just the confirmation that it needs to happen.
Yeah, no. And he goes, "I think at some stage something needs to be done. I normally try to avoid it, as you guys know. I like racing, but I think that's what we should be doing. If it works against us, I can't keep it happening." You can imagine that in a German accent, it makes sense. We got lucky that nothing happened, that they both were there, but it could affect them again. It's a headache, yeah, but it doesn't help to find a solution. It doesn't help always to be construct. What the hell does that mean? It's a headache, yeah. Steiner said the aggravation being caused by the tension between his drivers was especially annoying amid the team's ongoing battle to approve their car. Sorry. Yes, and he goes, it's a headache, yeah. Doesn't help to find a solution. Doesn't help to always, you know, doesn't always help to be constructive. But you can't keep on every race running into each other. It is getting old. And so their boss, I think, it has pretty much had it. Next time they get near each other on track, they're going to be given some pretty clear instructions to either stay the hell away, or they're just going to call it, you're going to be in front, he's going to be in front, that's it. So it's a bitch to see, because I loved seeing those guys battle and race, and I didn't like seeing them bang wheels as they did many, many times. And now you're going to pay the price, and the price is team orders. But that's the price you pay.
It's not surprising.
Mm.
Raz, do you have any more quick stories? I want to get into our race preview because I'm excited about that too.
Yeah, I do. Two more. So the FIA sees no issue with Hockenheim's drag strip runoff. So Formula One race director Michael Masi believes there was nothing wrong with the controversial drag strip area or ice rink area at the Hockenheim circuit, despite it being blasted as unacceptable by Charles Leclerc. Masi was aware of the driver's concerns about the situation and conducted a post-race inspection of the area, but he insisted that it was no different to runoff areas at any other tracks. Masi said the drag strip looks fine. We inspected it the other day and had a look again post-race with the water on it. It is fine. Even Sebastian Vettel is quoted as saying that it's normally one of the grippiest parts of the track and is no way different to any other painted runoff, to be quite honest. I think it was one of those ones where if I put water on a painted runoff, then as much as you can do anything to make sure it is anti-slip paint, it is still more slippery than unpainted tarmac. Asked if the main message for drivers was not to run off the circuit, Marcy said, correct, it is called track limit controls. I think he was saying that a little sarcastically, but yeah, I mean, it pretty much is a good message to the drivers. Stay on the damn track, or you're going to pay a really significant price. But yeah, they may claim it is too dangerous, but from our end, using the Austrian example, the drivers were all quite pleased with it, even with the bumps and that, he said. It punishes them for making mistakes, and it was similar way here. We saw the other implementation we had to do regarding turn one with the track limit side. So yeah, there's been a lot of complaining about that runoff area, and to which I say, don't run off the track.
Yeah, there's the edge of the track on the left and the edge of the track on the right. You want to position your car somewhere between those two points.
You know the big black bit in between?
Yeah.
Yeah, leave your car there.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were talking about something else, Raj.
Gross, Brayden. God damn.
You got your hand spread out. You said the big black thing. I'm like, well, Raj, I don't know what you're talking about. There's a Formula One podcast. I mean, yeah, we say some, you know, some dirty words, but come
talking
on.
Talking about your dick, Raj.
Oh, okay. All right.
Continue. So, McLaren is... This is a non-F1 story, by the way.
Oh, I used the wrong noise.
You did. Use the right noise.
There you go. There's a noise.
There's a correct noise. So, McLaren is pursuing Colton Herta, who is an IndyCar driver, for their full season partnership with IndyCar team for 2020. So McLaren is
not backing out of that. I thought they might maybe just decide, no Alonso, no one's bugging us about this. Let's maybe wrap up that.
They're not interested in Alonso. They'd rather get.
They still. I'm surprised they're still going like guns blazing at the Indy run.
Yeah, no, they're going with it. They're fine with it.
Mm.
And also, they don't really want to say no to Honda. Honda and Chevrolet being the only two manufacturers in IndyCar. But anyway, McLaren Racing CEO Zak Brown is engaged in significant discussions about forging an alliance with an existing IndyCar team. That IndyCar team being Arrow Schmidt Peterson Motorsports.
Is that who won this weekend? Who already have an orange car?
No.
Who won this weekend?
Chip Ganassi.
He has an orange car that looks a bit McLaren-y.
Yeah, that was Felix Rosenqvist's car.
Right.
He came second.
They
Scott
should partner
Dixon
with that
won.
Car because it's already orange.
Yeah, well.
Anyway.
Anyway, so this weekend at Mid-Ohio, Schmidt offered no comment when asked about renewed discussions with McLaren. while a McLaren spokesperson said the team continues to evaluate IndyCar but won't comment on rumours or speculations. So no one said anything, but if you talk to people who know, well, they're talking to Arrowsmith Peterson Motorsport. Brown remains in contact with other teams, you know, along with Arrow SPM, but they seem to be close to forging an alliance that would see the joint team run a two-car effort in 2020. Furthermore, paddock sources have told IndyCar that McLaren has made a lucrative offer to the top available talent, Colton Herter. And he is the biggest kind of rookie in
Colton
IndyCar.
Colton Herter. That's not a good name to say.
Colton Herter.
I don't like that name. It's not nice to say. It doesn't flow.
Fair enough.
Anyway, moving on. Let us talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yes.
Mistake. Here we go. What do you have for winner? Who do you? Oh, actually, let's go pole position first. Who do you have on pole? How do you never
Lewis
prepare
Hamilton.
This?
Lewis Hamilton.
Hamilton on pole. It's hard for me to go against that. I think he's really hungry after this weekend, so I've also picked Hamilton. But I don't know about the winning position.
He's really hungry after this weekend.
Yes. I feel like he's ending the podcast now.
Yeah.
I picked him to go pole to win because of how disappointed he will be in such a terrible race result from last week.
Yeah.
Have you got the same?
I
know it's bad that we do this, but we always say they're going to win, and they don't win. We're super confident, but
yeah, no, I honestly reckon Hamilton's going to come back strong this weekend. So Hamilton for the win, Verstappen in second.
I've got Leclerc in second and Verstappen in third. Who do you have for third place?
Bottas in third.
Okay, so you're saying Leclerc and Ferrari, they're out of the picture again?
I'm saying Ferrari is probably not going to have a very strong weekend this weekend.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mostly because the Hungaroring is like a go-kart track on steroids. There's a lot of turning.
True.
Ferrari don't do turning very well. They like going straight. There's not... how long is the straight in Hungary? It's like just a kilometer.
Oh, it's tiny. It's one of the shortest.
It's one of the shortest. Might not even be a kilometer, 900 meters or something. And so, yeah, it's very, very short.
Yeah, we have between... Oh, what is it? Turn four. There's only 14 corners as well, but it's very windy between like after turn four and then like around five and then six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Like all of that section is just back and forth, left, like flowing left and right. Yep. So you have a very small amount of straight between 11 and 12 and three and four, but that main straight is not very long, as you said.
It's like, oh, you only have 14 corners, but when there's no straight in between the corners, then it becomes just one long damn corner.
Everything from five to 11, I don't think you even get up to top gear. You just don't have time to do it.
No,
you're just
don't.
Flowing between them, which is a really cool section of the track.
That you'd even get up to 7th in a lot of that. It would be mid-gear, a lot of it.
I like playing this one on the Xbox and whatnot because of just the fact that you are... it's very flowing. It's
like
a go-kart track.
It's to me, the most challenging of Formula 1 circuits. But yeah.
Put rain in there, man. It'll be very interesting. It then negates those straights anyway, though. So
negates our predictions,
too. Yeah, it negates everything. We should maybe have two sections, wet and dry predictions.
Yeah.
But who do you have for fastest lap? I've put down Valtteri Bottas.
Wait, hold on. Going by, you know, the backmarker curse.
Yeah.
It is totally going to be dry this weekend. Absolutely dry. Not a chance of rain at all.
Okay, so I know what you're doing on Sunday. You're going to be out in the garden doing a fucking rain dance.
Maybe.
All right, fair enough. Fastest lap, though.
Fastest lap. We'll probably go to Max Verstappen.
Verstappen, fair enough. DNFs. We were 6 and 5 off last time. Can you get a little closer?
I'm going to say there'll be 4 DNFs here in Hungary.
I've said 3. I've gone a little higher than 1. And as you said, because it's a windy track and very difficult, it can be unforgiving.
Yeah.
So even without the wet race element, I still think it'll be more unforgiving than what we'd expect sometimes. The Hungarian Grand Prix last year was nothing crazy. We did have a Daniel Ricciardo podium, which was very fun. But do you think it will be a better or worse race than last year from what you remember?
Shit, what do I remember from last year?
I remember the Daniel Ricciardo podium.
Mm.
But I don't remember much else of it.
Yeah. I'm going to say better again.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this one.
Yeah.
And I'm also coming off on a high. I'm not. I'm really not expecting anything. Sorry,
no,
I keep forgetting we're trying to get... we're trying to lower expectations.
That's right. Yeah.
Finally, crack predictions.
Crack
predictions. Can I just say good Ricciardo race? Is that a crack prediction at this point?
Oh, God.
I'm saying that's a crack prediction, that he has a good race.
That That's depressing, man. Don't make that a crack prediction.
I think it is at this point. For him to just have a half-decent race is a good crack prediction.
Yeah. No, that would pass to me as a crack prediction, I've got to say.
Mm.
But my crack prediction, again...
Yes. Haas double? Oh, no.
No, no, no.
Renault
no.
above Red Bull.
No, no, not Renault above Red Bull. It's, again, from a long time ago. But it's also the Force India Pink Panther car.
Yeah.
Will be... One of them will be in the top five.
Force India, a top five. Okay. Cool. I thought you were going to use one of mine, which was two cars get lost. still the worst correct prediction I've ever made. It made sense in my mind. My definition of get lost was like during a practice section, take a turn. Or something. It made sense in my mind. Don't worry about it.
I'm glad that your mind works on such a great level.
Thank you. Because last week we rushed through the ending, I want to take it nice and slow right now and tell everyone that we are Backmarker Podcast. Backmarkerpodcast.com is where you can find all our links to our socials, which are, Raj, what's our Twitter?
That's where it is, Backmarker Podcast.
No, it's Backmarker Pod.
That's the Instagram.
Okay, Backmarker Pod is our Insta. Backmarker Podcast is our Twitter. And Backmarker Podcast is our Facebook. If any of those are wrong...
I'm going to get these wrong. I swear to God now, you're right. Backmarker Pod is the Twitter.
I think Backmarker Pod... Yes, it's at Backmarker Pod is our Twitter and Backmarker Podcast is our Instagram.
Yeah, it is.
But if you get confused, backmarkerpodcast.com, as we said, has all those links. We also have all our show notes and things on there. And finally, if you haven't given us a review or shared this with your friends, those are the things that really help us more than absolutely anything. We love all our listeners and our subscribers. And any way we can get some more of them is amazing. We just want to share the love of Formula One with the world.
Yeah, yes, we do. And I've got to say, we are pleasantly surprised that Formula One is winning our heart. No, it's not. It's terrible. Formula One's terrible. Formula yeah. One is dead.
We've been disheartened, but I've had a lot of fun in the last three races doing race reviews and things. It is. Instilled a sense of excitement each weekend that I was kind of losing for a small amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things where I was like, oh, I'm kind of tired. Maybe I'll watch the replay tomorrow. No, I'll watch it. Yeah. Now I'm like, fucking let's go. You know, Sunday night rolls around and I'm like, I got 4 minutes to get ready to watch this thing. Let's go.
Keep it up, Formula One.
Keep it up. It doesn't have to be the German Grand Prix every weekend, but if you can aim for that and come close, we'll be very happy chaps.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to get to those highs, but, you know, aim for them.
And if I
we
see
know it's
you,
possible,
Bernie, if I see you on one of the TV coverages just in the corner running out of sight with a sprinkler in your hand, I'm not even going to be angry.
Yeah, we won't say anything. We won't dob you in.
I won't.
Nah, we're not going to say anything. Or you know what? They say that the Singapore Grand Prix every year, well, not every year, but they do that thing where they like control the weather to make sure it's always nice weather.
Mm.
If we could like maybe look into like more rain. Rain's always good. You know, we're in a drought right now. If you can make some sort of rain machine.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that too.
Yeah.
I don't want to go all the way to like, let's put sprinklers on the track, but if you had some way to, you know, everyone out there, Backmarker rain dance.
If you had some way out there to officially change the weather, then we're all for that.
Anyone who knows any shamans, shit like that, just let them know that we're looking for a nice wet Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
If we're at the race, make it beautiful weather, but if we're not and watching it on TV, fucking
exactly.
Soak them.
Yeah. All the Albert Parks, make them dry.
I want like those guys in the plastic ponchos to like, those things are useless at this point. It's that wet.
Mm.
Anyway, I hope no one's going to that race that's listening. Hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah. Totally.
Anyway, we have dribbled on long enough. Raj.
We'll see you next week, guys.